Hello out there. Welcome to your next mission video podcast. To stay warfighting ready, the Army must always look to the future. They specifically did that in 2018 when they established the Army Futures Command, the newest of the Army's four major commands. On today's show, we'll talk with the command team of the Army Future Command and we'll focus on their mission and priorities. So stay with us as we look at the Army of the future. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Your Next Mission Video Podcast, where we tell the stories of those who have served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition to financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to all of our service members and veterans and families for your service to our great country. Now, before we get started, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, and Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback with additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision, and USAA. Together, they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans and families. And if you listen to the show before, I say it every week, we love them too. Today, we're going to be talking with the command team of Army Futures Command. And I'm excited, I'm motivated, I'm pumped up to introduce General James E. Rainey, Commanding General, and CSM Brian A. Hester, Command Sergeant Major of the Army Futures Command. And welcome to the show. And we're excited to tell the audience about the future of the command. So thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you very much, Sergeant Major. I appreciate the opportunity. Very proud of the Army and very proud of the men and women who work here at Army Futures Command. Excited to talk about that a little bit, but thank you on behalf of, you know, all of us that get to do what we do today. You know, you, your service to our great Army, and you know, the way you represent all our great veterans. Yeah, I never miss an opportunity to remind people that, you know, this is the freest country in the world. It's the United States Army put it on its feet and kept it there for going on 250 years now. And if it hadn't been for our veterans and the incredible families that support their soldiers, none of us would be here, you know, doing a podcast. We'd be doing something else. So thank you.
Well, I never thought I'd ever do a podcast, that's for sure. Hey, Sergeant Major, we have a lot to talk about today, but before we do that, would each one of you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself? And, sir, we'll start with you.
Okay. Yeah, Jim Rainey, grew up in Akron, Ohio, up in the Midwest, the Heartland, Rust Belt. Don't come from a military family, but when I was growing up, every person in my neighborhood that I respected, that I wanted to be like, had served. My youth pastor, my coach, the awesome guy down the street that kind of took care of everybody. So, you know, when the time came for me to decide what to do, I decided to serve and join the Army. I was blessed to, you know, I couldn't have afforded going to college, but the Army gave me the opportunity to go to college. And you know, I was going to come in and do my 4 years, and that was 36 years ago. And seriously thinking about making a career out of it. Once I figure out, I'm an infantry officer, served in all types of infantry, airborne, ranger, spent most of my later part of my career in the armored mechanized side, commanded 2-7 Cavalry, 3rd Brigade of 4th ID, the 3rd Infantry Division. Spent the later part of my career in the awesome TRADOC Enterprise, Chief of Infantry, commanded the Combined Arms Center. Sprinkle about 7 deployments in between there, and was blessed with the opportunity to lead Army Futures Command after being the G357.
Yeah, you know, we walked in the same ground because I'm an old tanker. I was in armor for, you know, the majority of my military career, and so I'm sure I was in the 3rd Infantry Division. I was in a bunch of different divisions, so I appreciate that. Well, God bless you. And the other thing I was going to tell you when you was talking about coming in, guys like me don't go to college either. And so I remember drinking a beer on a river, and a guy said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "Well, I don't know." He said, "Want to go to college? Guys like me don't go to college." He said, "Let's join the Army," and that's the reason why I joined the Army. So that was the best decision I ever made in my life. Sergeant Major Hester, how about yourself, sir? Sergeant Major, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thanks, SMA. And first, I just want to echo General Rainey's thoughts about thanking you guys for what you do and being part of this. And really, it's about the outreach of the Army to the community. And this is another opportunity for us to tell a little bit about the Army, maybe a little bit about us and about what we're doing and why it's important. But I grew up in a little town, Mount Sterling, Illinois, on the Midwest side of Illinois in the Farm Belt. My parents were you know, hobby farmers, I guess is the best way to describe it a little bit. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do after I got out of high school. I wanted to play sports, but I wasn't big enough, fast enough, or strong enough. So that was a problem for me. But I could pick up some things and carry them long distances for my nation and as a young infantry soldier. And so I decided to do that. And I, like the CG, I've served in most of our light infantry divisions, and I had the opportunity to lead soldiers from, you know, the fire team level, where you got three young men, three young women focused on a task and getting after it, all the way up to being a division sergeant major, and then an Army Service Component Command sergeant major, and then finally here at Army Futures Command, where we get the awesome opportunity to try to transform the Army and figure out what the Army needs to look like and tonight. And frankly, you know, 20 and 30 years into our future. So hard problem to solve, but we're excited to do it and passionate about it.
Yeah, well, I appreciate what both of you do, because it's a big deal about having the kind of equipment and technology we need for the future. You know, sir, the Army Future Command is charged with transforming the Army to ensure war-winning future readiness. Would you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, thanks. Thank you very much, Sergeant Major. So, What I tell people, you know, it's important to remember, like, we only have one Army. I mean, we got the Army we have. It's the best in the world, indisputably the most dominant land force. And making sure it stays that way at any point in the future is why the Army dedicated an ACOM, stood up Army Futures Command. So we have to generate current readiness so that our teammates at ForceCom and out in the components, General Williams over in Europe, General Flynn out in the Pacific, and our other component commanders, they're kind of focused in making sure that if we go to war, you know, if the nation calls today, this weekend, we're ready. And some people talk about modernization, et cetera. What I like to think about is all of that is about future readiness. You know, we want to be ready in the near term. We want to be ready at any point in that continuum. And that's basically what we mean when we say transform the Army to ensure war-winning future readiness.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that, you know, I hate to tell it, I will tell you, when I came in the Army, I had an M14. And I was on 48 tanks when I came into the service. And I tell you, other countries, they look at the kind of weapons and technology that we have. So we need to make sure that we continue to develop our weapon system. So I came in with that, left with an M1 and an AR. So, I mean, we've got to continue to get better and better on the battlefield, because really, quite frankly, and you know this probably a lot better than I do, what makes us better is, of course, our NCO and officer corps, but also the technology on the battlefield. We control the battlefield, and that's what's gonna help us win all the wars that we have to fight. Sergeant Major, Army Future Command is in Austin. Why? What's the local community done to really help your organization?
Well, first off, I think it's because Texas is awesome. That's what all the Texans can tell you.
Okay, I got you. I got you.
So I'm an implant Texan, at least for the last 2.5 years. And then, you know, Austin's a great city. It's the seat of the state. And there's a really interesting startup culture here. There's a really interesting academia enterprise with Texas A&M, with UT Systems here. There's also a number of other smaller universities that are part of that are fantastic partners with us. But, you know, the Army took a look at where should they stand up this ACOM, and they came down to three cities, all of which offered some great opportunity for the Army in this space. And it just so happened that Texas, you know, hit a home run. They were, the other cities probably hit some ground rule doubles with it, but Texas went out of their way. The government here in Texas went out of their way. And that's the reason why we're here in Austin. And, you know, we have access to the great community at Fort Cavazos. We have access to Joint Base San Antonio, which is close here too. So you've got that installation activities and wraparound support that we really enjoy here. And frankly, Texas is a good place for veterans. There's a lot of folks that are really interested in our nation and our freedom here in Texas. And it just makes a lot of good sense for us to be here. And we've done a lot of really good outreach with the community, a lot of outreach with academia and industry here in Texas. And it's been fantastic for this command. And it offers us an opportunity to really get after the things that are important, which is making sure we're ready today and in the future.
Yeah, I'm sure since you mentioned it, Fort Cavazos, do you bounce ideas of stuff that you're thinking about off to Cavazos? I'm sure you bounce it all over the entire Army, but do you use them in a different way? Maybe you do it at some of the other installations?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest things we do is things like we call soldier touch points, right? So any new item of equipment, any new material or concept that we're going to work on, we got to have our young men and women that are actually going to use that at the tactical edge, in combat, in training, get their hands on it while it's in the development of the requirement and the prototyping for that equipment. So we're constantly doing things with Cavazos and Liberty and Drum and you know, Hawaii out at Schofield Barracks, and really all over our Army and all over our Joint Force. We want to make sure that we're not putting anything in a soldier's hands that they haven't touched already. And we make sure that the knob's on the right side, the button's on the right side.
Yeah.
That really makes it easy for them to manipulate in earnest. And, you know, you talked about the M48 tank to the M1 tank. And the M1 tank's been around for a while. It's still the greatest tank in the world, but we got to make sure we have the next greatest tank in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah,
our young men and women at Cavazos and all across the Army touching these items of equipment as we're developing them is really important to us.
Yeah. You know, two things. One is the M1 that I was on was at a 105. Now it's a 120. So they're getting bigger and bigger. The other thing I'll tell you is sort of a funny story. When I was in the Pentagon, somebody sent me an email one time out of a soldier that was complaining about boots. And I said, hey, you know, he said, I have the worst boots in the world. They fall apart in Afghanistan. We get in them out and they're not worth a crap. And so I actually called this young man up and said, hey, look, it took me a while to convince who I was. But once I convinced him who I was, I ended up sending him to Natick. That's why I'm sending him to Natick to work on the boots to make it better. So we need to make sure we take ideas and recommendations from all sorts of people to make sure we get just what you're saying, sir and sergeant major, get the best kind of equipment for our young men and women on the battlefield. Sir, they say only constant has changed from your perspective. What are some of the major changes that you see in modern warfare? Would you, you know, tell us a little bit about that? Tell us about the future, how you anticipate the future.
Yeah, if I can, sir, absolutely. But on that last point, just to pile on with the sergeant major and your comment, you know, I say that the closer you are to getting shot, the better you are at innovating.
And, That's true.
We got a lot of people, and you know, I won't bore you with history, but the hedgerow fight in World War II, you know. A great non-commissioned officer that knew how to weld found a great young enlisted soldier that knew about tractors, and next thing you know, we're breaching the hedgerows, you know, and then General Eisenhower saw that and Marshall and they scaled that. So yeah, I mean, AFC, we're part of the team, but we go out of our way to make sure that the warfighters and their input is the thing that dominates, you know, what everything we do. And we got a great partnership with Forcecom and you know, so anyways, so I always tell people, and we are certainly in the most disruptive period in the character of war, you know, I would offer certainly since before World War II, maybe in the history of, you know, mankind. I mean, it is crazy the speed and scale of disruption that is happening right now in technology. Whether you look at Ukraine, Gaza, and pick a place. I mean, whatever you think you knew today is going to be different 90, 180 days from now. Civilian industry is innovating. the impact of data. But what I always start with is what's not changing, Sergeant Major. You know, let's talk about what we know is not going to change, because that's much more knowable, I would offer, than trying to predict the future. And I'd offer three things. One, war remains a human endeavor.
Yeah.
It's a contest of will between people. You look at Ukraine versus Russia, you look at what's going on in Gaza. The next time we fight, it would be a huge error for us to forget that it is about human beings and imposing their will on each other. So it's still about people. The second one is that the land domain, you know, there's some people that are speculating about, you know, space, cyber, air. We fight as a joint force. I'm absolutely a joint believer, but land remains decisive. That's where people live. That's where the cities are. That's where the roads are. That's where the supplies are. Every joint capability, the Navy has to go to port, the Air Force has to land, space starts and stops on the ground, and cyber, everybody that does it and all the servers are all on the land. So I don't see anything that tells me that land is not going to remain one of the decisive domains. And the third one, almost nobody talks about, is I believe the United States military, and especially the Army, is going to remain a values-based military. I mean, we are special because we follow the law of armed conflict. We don't indiscriminately kill people. We don't drop bombs on cities. You and me and Sergeant Major have all witnessed soldiers put themselves in harm's way, accept unbelievable amount of risk to be sure that they're not going to kill people that they shouldn't, or damage buildings and things unnecessarily. So people, land, law of armed conflict, which is good news if you're in the United States Army and the United States military, because those are our strengths. Our number one superpower is our people. We have an all-volunteer force. You mentioned the technology, and you know, because you were around, the reason we're able to field high technology equipment is because the high standards we have for men and women to be able to join us. You know, if we had a conscript army, we couldn't field next-gen squad weapon systems and the technology we do. The superpower we have that everybody wants is our non-commissioned officer corps. I deal a lot with foreign governments. We talk about what U.S. equipment they should buy. I said, what you really need is non-commissioned officer corps like the United States Army, because that gives us leaders at scale. We have better leaders and more of them. And then our real superpower is the men and women who command our formations, you know, coupled with a command sergeant major or first sergeant. 16, 20 years of training and development. So we're good in the people space, and we need to preserve that no matter what. The second one is we train and do maneuver warfare, joint level Army combined arms maneuver. We don't settle into attrition war and trade human beings for pieces of terrain like you're seeing some places in the world. And then our value system, you know, we're a values-based military, like I said, and that lets us do things and have credibility in the war, and the confidence of the American public and Congress is all underpinned by those values. So I spend a lot of time making sure, like our chief and our secretary, the Sergeant Major of the Army, that whatever we do to modernize, it's not at the cost of our making sure we have the best people and that we train ruthlessly so we don't trade blood for contact. Yeah. Now, there is craziness going on. The UAS revolution you're seeing is the leading edge of a robotic, you know, what the UAV did to the air domain 20 years ago. Technology is at the point now where we're witnessing that kind of, that autonomy can finally disrupt the land. It was the hardest because of the laws of physics, obviously, crossing rivers and stuff. Data, artificial intelligence, large language models, they are not going to replace humans, but whoever figures out how to bring that to bear to increase their lethality, I believe it'll be the United States, is going to have a deterrent effect because you know we don't we want to deter war, not fight war. We got to be ready to fight, but the goal is to convince our enemies it's pointless to fight us. Our ability to master data and technology and apply it is that's akin to me to the nuclear arms race, the space race. It is that big a deal. Hypersonics, new aircraft, lighter, more lethal tanks and infantry fighting vehicles. All those things are possible, and those are the big changes I see. And then most importantly, you know, the best weapon system we have in the United States Army is a rifle squad. You know, the men and women who close with and destroy. Everybody else exists to put them in a position of advantage, and making sure that we continue to have the best weapon systems, the best night vision, the best communication gear, electronic warfare, UAS, counter UAS capabilities, world-class medical care. I remember, I know that was a passion of yours, Sergeant Major. It's a passion of Sergeant Major Hester's. You know, we got to turn the golden hour into the golden day to be ready for the next fight. And those kind of changes are the things that we're mostly focused on.
Yeah. You know, when all the time you're talking, I'm thinking tough, realistic training. Make sure, you know, I used to say the thing, train the way you're going to fight. The other thing I'll tell you is that you talked about making sure people don't want to fight with us. I remember, I don't know if you know General Nash, Bill Nash, I don't know if you know him or not, but he was my commander when I was in the 1st Armored Division. And I remember him getting all the senior NCOs together and saying, hey, look, I don't know if we got to fight, but the key to success is to make sure they understand that if we have to fight, we're going to win. And so just looking tough and looking mean and letting them understand that you're ready to do what you have to do if you have to do, you know, fight somebody. The other thing is that, and you're really right about the basic squad, the team, the young men and women that are on the ground that kicking doors. People don't realize that they're the ones that really, really struggle on the battlefield. If in fact, especially in today's fight. Hey, Sergeant Major General Rainey said that earlier, that the Chief of Staff says continuous transformation is a priority. Would you elaborate? I mean, I know transformation was always a priority when I was in the Army, but would you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'd like to first pile on a little bit to what General Rainey did.
Sure,
say
go there. Ahead. Yeah.
You know, being brilliant at the basics, understanding yep. our MOS skills and leader skills, and being able to employ them at the edge effectively is absolute requirement for our Army. You know, and then when you think about technology, the ability to then infuse technology into that to gain more of an advantage is powerful. So when you think about technology and the skill and the will associated with fighting, if you can do that better than your enemy, if you can integrate that technology, you're going to be able to be better, and you're going to win faster and more decisively. So the ability to both be brilliant at the basics and take technology and put it in the hands of the soldier in a meaningful way is really important. So, but as far as transformation goes, so we really look at it in three periods of time. The first period of time is about 18 to 24 months, which is continuous transformation, transforming contact. And really we can't be blinded by the aspirational when we can deliver what's available today into formations within 18 to 24 months. So our chief and secretary have been, violently focused on this, if I could use the word violently focused, to get after the things that are out there, both technology wise and concept wise, and put those in our formations between 18 and 24 months. And we're working with ForceCom, TRADOC, AMC, the Army Service Component Commands to be able to do that as fast as we can. We might fail initially, but failing fast is okay as long as we continue to develop it and move forward and make it better each and every day, so we can stay ahead of our adversaries, because they're doing the same thing we're doing. They're trying to transform.
Absolutely.
They're trying to stay ahead of us. So we got to do the best we can. Then we have deliberate transformation, and that's really focused on those signature modernization priorities that have been, solidified really since the beginning of AFC about 6 years ago. And that's driven by the POM, that's driven by TAA, that's the entire .mil PFP approach to delivering on transformation. And that is what's going to allow us to continue to put those signature systems in soldiers' hands going forward. And then concept-driven transformation, which is, you know, what is our Army going to need to look like in 30 or 40 years? We're going to make some big bets along the way there, and hopefully we'll get it about 50% right. When we think about it, it's going to be focused on those critical required capabilities that we believe as we go through war gaming and other kinds of activities to see if we can paint a picture for what the battlefield might look like in 2040 and beyond. So those are really the three areas that we're driving transformation. And we really believe that we're having a lot of good luck with these three periods of time. And people are starting to internalize that and think about that in a meaningful way, both inside the Beltway, all the way down to our formations, which is fantastic. When our young men and women can think about a concept that the Army is trying to do at the highest level, and then they can operationalize that in their formations, then we're going to continue to be successful with regard to transformation. We've got to continue to do this. Our adversaries are going to do it. Our bet is we've got to be able to do this faster. We've got to bring speed. We got to bring lethality. We have to bring protection to our formations in a meaningful way. And then that's going to allow us to bring our adversaries to the negotiating table. So we don't have a long war. We have a short, quick war where we demonstrate that we are still the most dominant land force in the world, the most dominant joint force in the world, and we're back to some resemblance of peace.
Yeah. One of the things that I remember when I interviewed with General Shinseki, and we talked about transformation. He said that we can talk about transformation till we're blue in the face. There's still people that don't know anything about it. And the other thing that we always talked about is that if we have a new equipment, and sir, you brought this up already, it takes us so long to get that new technology into the battlefield. And we always tried to, you know, instead of 10 to 20 years, we wanted to speed that up so it was 3 to 5 or 6 years or something like that. Is that still an issue? I guess it probably still is an issue, isn't it? You smile when I say that, so I guess it is.
Well, not the 10 to 20 year thing, but yeah, all right. You know, okay. So. You know, if there is no amount of time where you could ask me if I was satisfied with it. And the only person that's more impatient than me is probably General George, our chief of staff of the Army. Yeah. So we need to go faster. I mean, you know, the next time we go to war, we need to have capabilities we don't have right now. Not a lot. We got a lot of the best capability. You know, we do have the best tank, best attack helicopter, best rifle squads. But we got to get going. So I'm never satisfied. But we do have great acquisition professionals in the Army. The Army has done a great job over about the last 5 or 6 years of sticking to our modernization priorities. You know, 2 administrations, 4 secretaries, you know, 2 chiefs. We've resisted the temptation because in the past when we've struggled was we kept moving the goalposts around, yeah. You know, so we've been consistent. And the stand up of AFC, I would offer helped because that unified the requirements process. But like I said, we got, you know, Mr. Bush and his team, the Army acquisition, they've cut the time down conservatively by 50%.
Oh, wow.
You know, so 10 yeah. years to 5 years.
Yeah.
Where we still need to get a little better if we're grading ourselves as an Army, and there's, you know, there's room for everybody, I'm not pointing fingers, is when there's some piece of technology that exists that doesn't need to be developed, that doesn't take a whole bunch of dot mil PFP, you know, you don't have to go out and build a new motor pool, build a new range, just good emerging capability, cheap, inexpensive UAVs, simple robots, good counter UAV technology, where we already have the structure, we have the formations, we have the capability, we just need the kit. We got to be able to close that acquisition kill change much faster than we are.
Yeah.
You know, we need to be able to see something happening on the battlefield and put it in the hands of a rifle squad. You know, I would not be happy if that was more than 6 months to do that.
Yeah.
Right now it's running closer to 18 to 24 months.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things. I remember when I was at CENTCOM, one of the Special Operations Command down there, they would take a lot of off-the-shelf technology. And so they get that stuff, and they had their own little budget, so they bring that stuff in a lot quicker. And I always wonder why the Army couldn't do that a little bit faster. But cutting that down from 10 to 5 years or whatever, that's still saving lives on the battlefield. And that's what we're all talking about. Yeah. How do we make it better?
Yeah, and we don't. Yeah, and sometimes the deliberate process, you know, like we don't want somebody designing the next tank over a 4-day weekend.
No, no, absolutely right?
Like,
not.
Yeah, like, yeah. You know, you want to bring the process to bear. We're accountable to Congress for how we spend the money.
Yeah.
So you know, you don't want to be reckless, but you got to be fast. So it's tempo, not speed, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, and there are examples. You know, the innovation that's happened down at the unit level is phenomenal. And you know, pulling that all together, there's no shortage of soldiers who, whether they're the men and women at the software factory we have here, or people in innovation cells that are out in our divisions, they have tech skills. You know, I'm way more optimistic about young people than some people, you know, mine in the sergeant major's age. You know, they are innovative by nature. They're tech savvy, globally aware. You know, people who don't remember not having a cell phone are really powerful when you're trying to get into the tech innovation space, as opposed to, you know, folks like us who almost got through college without touching a computer, you know.
Yeah, I'm like, if I could pile on to
go
that
ahead,
too,
absolutely, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, when we say field craft in the Army, everybody kind of understands what that is, right? It's the ability to fight, win, and survive, use your skills in an austere environment to accomplish the mission. So what's really emerging in this space is tech craft. It's the ability of our young people to take their basic skills and then technology and merge that together. You know, I was writing a paper recently. I was talking about the emergence of UAVs as an example in the early 2000s. And we would look at these things and think, wow, what are we going to do with these things? And then all of a sudden the light bulb came on and we were doing tech craft and we didn't even know we were doing tech craft, because we figured ways to observe, to strike, to do battle damage assessment with these tools, these new tools that were flying around in the air, making a buzzing noise that sounded like a big bee. And we really started to harness that. And that has continued to develop over time, where our young men and women they're not digital natives. They understand how to take a piece of technology and then incorporate it into their day-to-day life. They communicate in ways that we would not communicate. You know, we would wait for the end of the day to have a meeting, write down a bunch of information in our notebook and put it out to everybody. They would be, they're doing that simultaneously while they're getting information, and that's just one tool, right? And then they're figuring out ways to use the equipment that we're developing in you know, ways that we probably wouldn't think about doing that.
Yeah.
Some of that's really good. Some of it, you know, causes us some challenges along the way, but we have to cultivate this. We can't stifle this innovation that young people want to have, this ability to think through problems and do things differently in ways that we might not do that as 50 plus year old people that have been in the Army for 30 years. We might say, wow, I'd really rather focus on doing the basics over and over and over again to mastery, which is important. And that's why we're driving that part of it. We're also offering the space for them to think and to innovate and to look at things from a different perspective. And we think that's really powerful, and we think that tech craft is, you know, it's here to stay in our formations, and we can't stifle that for one second. We really have to lift that up and let our young people know that, you know, tell us what's on your mind. We may not have thought about that, and it may be revolutionary for us.
Yeah, I tell you what, you get me so pumped up listening to you talk right there. I want to go put my uniform on and start shooting and doing something anytime. Hey,
well, we're hiring, Sergeant Major. Come on back, man.
You probably don't want me. Hey, first of all, we're going to have to take a quick break. But in our next segment, I'd like to discuss the importance of bringing industry, which you already talked about, so partners together in Project Convergence. But first, there's always a but first and everything. We got to take a short break. So don't go anywhere. No, I know you're not going anywhere. This is Your Next Mission Video Podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. And if you're enjoying this discussion, I know you are, because we're talking about the future of our Army, the future of our country. Please like us. Click on that subscribe button below. And be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. And Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at PurdueGlobal.edu. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're talking with General James E. Rainey, Commanding General, and CM Brian A. Hester, Command Sergeant Major of the Army Futures Command. Before we get back to our discussion, I'd like to take a few seconds to tell you about a new program we're excited about called Your Next Mission VCS, a Veterans Community Support Program. We'll provide personalized one-on-one support to address the unique needs within our veteran community, facilitated through our many partnerships with other veteran service organizations. Please check us out at yournextmission.org/VCS and enroll to participate today. Remember, we want to help you with whatever issue you or your family are facing. So please, and I've said it a bunch of times, please, please reach out to us. Sir, the Project Convergence is a huge event that occurs every year. Would you tell us about the significance of that event?
Yeah, it's one of the hallmark things we do here in Army Futures Command for the Army, for the Joint Force, and we're very excited about it. So experimentation vice exercises is an important thing to understand. So when you do an exercise, it's about generating readiness, training, 8-step training model, getting better. When you experiment, it's about testing ideas, concepts, and technology to see whether they're a good idea or not. So it's a big difference. In fact, going back to how awesome our soldiers are, one of the hardest things is convincing our young leaders that in an experiment, it's okay for you to tell me it didn't work. You know, we got these studly men and women out there that you give them a bad kit and they still figure out some way to win. I'm like, hey, that's good in combat. Yeah. That's good in training. Yeah. That's great in combat. Yeah. Experimentation is about, you know, hey, let's figure out whether we got this right before we spend a bunch of money.
That's right.
And start putting soldiers in harm's way. So Project Convergence is a Army hosted joint experiment series. So smaller experiments, one a month or so. And then about once a year, we do a capstone event. Comes in two parts. One is focused at the joint level. One is more focused at the Army level. And it's gotten bigger and better every year. We bring partners and allies together. We do it out at Camp Pendleton, because we like having that West Coast Pacific focus. We need some water, need some airspace. Next year, we're going to move it all the way out into the Indo-Pacific Theater with General Flynn and USRPAC sponsorship and some help from Admiral Paparo and his team. And then the other part is in the dirt at our, you know, the national treasure that is the National Training Center, which I, going back to your point about Training Sergeant Major, if you look at the Army's recovery post-Vietnam, the excellence in Desert Storm, OIF-1, the readiness we have today, I would offer that our national training centers had as much or more to do with that than any technological piece of kit.
Yeah, know? No doubt so about it. Yeah.
We go out in the National Training Center and get after it, you know, in the dirt. And what's funny is a lot of stuff works when it's zeros and ones on a computer and a PowerPoint slide. But, you know, you put it out there in the desert, 100 degrees, let soldiers break it, you know, try and break it. You learn a lot about whether equipment's going to work or not. And just a couple highlights. This last year, we did the first ever battalion-sized human-machine integrated live fire. So humans and robots. Think about the mount site in Irwin, where the first thing in every single building was not a human being. We put a UAV through a window, a robot dog through the door. all the smoke generation, shot Miklicks off of robots instead of.
Oh my goodness.
I know you got some time in heavy formation. You know, you know how brave the dude that had to bounce up to the obstacle to shoot that freaking Miklick that didn't work half the
time. I got you.
So not on PowerPoint, not concepts. We went out and live fired that out at the Central Corridor at NTC. And that's just one example of the power of this kind of experimentation I'm talking about.
Oh my goodness. So,
go ahead, industry's with us on it, right? So that's what's different. You know, it's not a program of record, a handful of defense primes. You know, the defense primes are great, valuable teammates. We need them. The country needs them. But there are young startup companies, mid-tier tech companies that are all about joining the Army in the dirt to understand the problems we're trying to solve so they can bring their awesome capabilities to bear.
Yeah. So are you sharing that? I'm sure you share that information with other services about new technology, new equipment. You guys go back and forth with this stuff all the time.
Yeah. We're the only service that has a 4-star dedicated futures command type operation, but all the services do the same processes. They do requirements acquisition, transformation, experimentation. So we're partnered all the way across the joint force. And like I said, with almost all of our allies in NATO, partners out in the Pacific, you know, Five Eyes, but even beyond that, we had 7 different countries participate in the last Project Convergence. Absolutely. Because like I said, you know, we fight as a joint force, mm-hmm. period. It's the strength of the Army. Anybody who's ever been in combat, you know, would would absolutely acknowledge that it takes everybody, you know.
No question.
And why would we not do that? That's the strength of the United States. Yeah. If you choose to fight the United States, you got to deal with space, cyber, maritime, air, land. You know, it's a superpower that we have.
Yeah. Sergeant Major, you want to add anything to that, General's comments?
Yeah, I think that Project Convergence and Capstone, you know, that's our capstone event that we try to do once every 12 to 18 months. But also we've got persistent experimentation. That's experimentation that's happening around the globe with all of our partners every day. You know, if USERPAC has got Balikatan going on, we've got our Joint Modernization Command that's doing experimentation, our Future Concept Center that's doing experimentation in these exercises. Exercises to build readiness and experiments to you know, figure out what's going to work right and what's not going to work right. And then how do we develop that, you know, going back to .mil PFP, you know, is our doctrine right? Is our organization right? Is our training right? Is our material right? Et cetera, et cetera. So this is not just Project Convergence, the event that happens once every 12 to 18 months. This is a persistent experimentation activity that really, really gets after. So we're not waiting for Project Convergence to happen. We're putting these ideas, these concepts, this material into these exercises from an experimental perspective to develop it along the way so that when we get to Capstone, it really is a capstone event. It's soldiers, it's industry, it's commanders, it's command sergeant majors looking at this, eyes and ears wide open. Will this work or will this not work? And then if it's not working, we're iterating at the speed of me looking at the CG and saying, sir, we need to change something. Or the boss looking at one of our partners and saying, hey, that's really great, except for it needs to do this also. And then their scientists and their engineers doing it right then. And then we're reiterating and seeing where we're getting it right and where we're failing. So it's a really, really powerful tool in our kit bag to make sure that we're delivering, you know, for the Army of 2040, and we're delivering on transformation.
Oh, God bless both of you for what you're doing. This is such important work, and I sort of appreciate it. Unfortunately, we're going to take another quick break. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Now here's a word from two more of the organizations that make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Part of transitioning out is that dental and vision insurance breaks off from your medical insurance.
Vision and dental is very important to be able to enjoy your retirement.
Blue Cross Blue Shield makes a transition so much easier.
And USAA.
A promise is a trust not to be broken. Whether spoken with an oath or sealed with a pinky. And after 100 years, we're still taking care of the military community and their families. That's our mission, always.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with General James E. Rainey, Commanding General, and CSM Brian A. Hester, Command Sergeant Major of the Army Futures Command. Remember, this is your show. We know there's so many issues out there that directly affect you. We want to address each and every one of them. So please, as I said before, reach out to me. Tell me what topics you'd like to cover on the show. You can call or text me at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilley@yournextmission.org and I'll reach back out to you. Sir, as if you said one of the Army Futures Command main missions is design the Army of 2040 and deliver the Army in 2030. How will you drive change across the Joint Partnerships Academy and district and with it as we move into the next decade beyond, to accomplish our mission?
Yeah, hey, thanks, Sir Major. And again, I said it early, but, we have one Army.
Yeah.
Right, one Army. So we what we cannot do is we don't have the luxury of building the Army for the future at the same time we generate the Army we need for today. So that's why it's a process. So times like 2030, 2040, they're useful as guideposts. You know what I'm saying? But it's not like we're trying to build, the Army we got now, build a different one for 30, build a different 20. 40. So it's that continuous transformation. 2030 is about the time that the FYDEP, so the Department of Defense, the government's planning process for money runs from about 2 to 7 years. So in that space, that's where we're delivering signature modernization efforts, programs of record, equipment like that. The decade from 30 to 40 is out beyond the FYDEP. It's where science and technology experimentation is most useful because we have the time to make bigger changes. And I personally think there's some, right now we're seeing evolutions, logical evolutions of warfare. I think we're on the cusp of seeing some major revolutionary type disruptions potentially that'll happen out there. So we want to make sure we design an army to be ready for that decade. We want to make sure we deliver all the capabilities across DOTMO PFP, the people and the training being the most important leader development. Make sure we deliver that as over the next 5 to 7 years. And then at the same time, General Pappas and his teammates down there at ForceCom and the chief, they're responsible for making sure inside a couple years we maintain the most lethal dominant land force in the world.
Mm. So, Major, how can the soldier be more must prepare for the ready to be ready in the future? I mean, what does the soldier need to do to make sure they're ready in the future?
Well, I think they might want to tune in here and listen to what we're talking about.
That's a good one. That's step number one.
So if you're out there and you got a friend that hasn't watched yet, tune in. I'm sure YouTube or somebody will let you watch us. But all jokes aside, really you got to focus on being fit and disciplined, a master at your particular craft, your particular MOS, occupational specialty in the Army. You have to invest in your people. You got to both communicate well to people, and you've also got to listen to people. Listening is free, and learning is difficult. So you gotta invest in each other. So I think that's the number one thing. How do we continue to invest in each other? There's these kinds of events. There's training events. There's training meetings. And there's, you know, other kinds of engagements with leaders that help develop our soldiers in a meaningful way. Soldiers have to have access to leaders. And then leaders have got to explain their priorities. And they've got to drive that. They got to be, you know, leaders of change across their formations. But the bottom line is involvement at every level is essential. It doesn't matter if you're a brand new soldier in the Army or if you're a 36-year-old four-star general or et cetera, et cetera. You've got to just be involved in the process, not be hesitant to look at things objectively and say, this will work or this will not work as we continue to move forward. And tell us about it. We always say, hey, we're really easy to find. If you're on the global, the joint global, and you look for Rainey and Hester, you're going to find us. And if you just send us an email, we're going to respond to your email. And we're going to say, wow, that's powerful, or wow, that's maybe not so powerful. Talk to your squad leader. That's a problem we probably can't solve for you. But it is really about just building that culture of innovation, building that culture of we are all in this together. Yeah. Leaders, soldiers, families, veterans, academia, industry. We will not win the next large-scale combat operation without the entire country doing their part. Yeah. We're going to do our part as an Army. We're going to be dominant on land. We know our Air Force is going to be dominant in the air, et cetera, across the joint force. But people holistically don't know their Army and they don't know their Department of Defense. And it's a great place to serve. It's a great place to learn lessons. It's a great place to develop yourself as a person of character and discipline and commitment. And we just got to continue to develop those characteristics and that culture across our organization and our entire Army and our nation. We're blessed to have the opportunity to lead at this level. We're blessed to have the opportunity to still be in this uniform, wear this cloth of our nation, take our turn on the wall, et cetera, et cetera. And it's important for our way of life. And it's meaningful.
Yeah. You know, I tell people all the time that I've had a lot of great years of my life, but probably some of the best years of my life was being a soldier and serving in the military, because of the people and the technology and the equipment, but also the mission and what, you know, real world mission, that the things we have to do to make sure this country is free. This has been a great discussion and, you know, pretty complex. Prepare the Army for future, and, you know, it's a wide depth of information there that you guys put out today, and I certainly appreciate it. I thank you for sharing that with us and sharing that not just with me, but really our audience today. And any final thoughts, anything that maybe we should have talked about, maybe we didn't talk about? Sir, we'll start with you. Any last minute comments you want to make the audience?
Well, just thanks again to everybody. You know, the kindest thing people do for each other is give them some of their time. So if you're watching this, I appreciate that and don't take that lightly. No, Sergeant Major, you know, I just bring it back to what I said. You know, the most important thing is human beings. And that is the strength of the United States Army. And preserving that is the one thing that's going to matter most. If we don't get that right, nothing else we talked about is going to matter. If we do, we're going to be okay. And I would just take the last opportunity to thank the men and women who've taken their turn on the wall, who put on the country's cloth when they were asked, the families that supported them, the men and women serving today. You know, it is a tough life. It's a sacrifice to serve. It's rewarding and absolutely worth it, but it's not the easiest way to make a living. And then to the young people out there, they're thinking about what they want to do with their life. I cannot overstate the value of doing something with your life that's bigger than just you, something that matters. Going to bed at night with a clean conscience, waking up in the morning proud and excited about what you do. And there's a lot of ways to do that, and putting on a uniform ain't for everybody, certainly. But, you know, volunteer, coach youth sports, teach public school, work in health corps, health care, protect your local community and first responder, or if you think you're up to it, join our team and you'll never regret it.
Who are Sergeant Major Hester? How about yourself, sir? Last minute thoughts, any final thoughts, sir?
Yeah, SMA, thanks. Thanks to the listeners. Thanks to you for facilitating this. This has been great. This is another opportunity for us to be able to tell our story. So we've had an Army for 249 years, which is longer than we've had a nation. And we're closing in on 250 years. And I'm 100% confident that we're going to have the best Army in the world 250 years from now. And that is because of our love for our nation, our way of life. It's because we do have people that are willing to serve, and that is powerful. We probably don't have as many people as we would like that are willing to serve. So, you know, the CG said earlier about the people in his life that inspired him to serve. If we all look at ourselves in the mirror, we can probably point to some person in our life along the way that inspired us to serve. And I think that those people are out there everywhere. And just take a moment, take it in. If you're on the street corner in New York City, or you're standing at the Farm and Home Supply in you know, some place in the Midwest, it's because men and women are willing to do things for their nation that's really important. And our job is as you said, transform the Army, is to make sure that our Army has the best equipment, the best training, the best facilities, etc., so that when our nation calls, we're ready. And we're ready now, and we're going to be ready in the future. And we're just thankful for a great opportunity to serve. We do this because we love our nation, we love our country, we love our way of life. We're committed to our Constitution, and it's powerful to us, and I'm sure it's powerful to the people that are listening. So thanks for being with us today, and go out there and enjoy the best nation in the world, the United States.
Ooh, thanks, Sergeant Major, sir. Thank you guys so much for being on the show. I certainly appreciate it, and as always, have a great Army Day. Hooah.
Hey, thanks a lot, SMA.
All right, thank you, sir. Thanks again to General James E. Rainey and CSM Brian A. Hester for being with us today. I'm Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. You've been enjoying Your Next Mission video podcast, and thank you for joining us. Log on our website at yournextmission.org and leave me a review. I always say I hope it's a good one, but if it's a bad one, I really need your feedback. While you're there, you can visit our nonprofit and corporate partners who have jobs and services available that can assist you in your transition from the military. And check out a job board with partnership with Recruit Military, where you can search for a job that's just right for you. Please go to our website to watch a short video that will help fine-tune your search and where you can create your own personal profile. You can follow me on all my personal social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Rumble. And if you enjoy what we're doing with Your Next Mission, please click on that subscribe button below, and don't forget to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcasts. Don't forget, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134. Send me an email at smatilley@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to General Rainey and Sergeant Major Hester for joining us today. And I would just say that the Army changed my life. It made me a better person than I was going to be if I wouldn't have came in the Army. But I raised my hand. I said, I'll protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that meant that I'd give my life. So we need to make sure that we have people like we just had, General Rainey and Sergeant Major, on here that talked about our future Army, about the people that keep us free and the kind of equipment that we need on the battlefield to make sure that not just us, not just the Army, but all of us are free to do the things that sometimes we take for granted. Again, the Army is a great place, and if you're considering going in the Army, please do, because it made me a better person each and every day that I was in. So God bless each and every one of you. Thank you for listening. Thanks for watching. Thanks to New Mind Studio, of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, Blue Cross Blue Shield, FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield, FEP Vision, and USAA. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.